Wake up! Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. You are now listening to UMES 30. I'm your host, Dr. Joshua K. Wright. UMES 30 is a talk show bringing you lively, thought-provoking discussion on a variety of topics. Each show will feature an extended conversation with a guest. While many of these individuals will come from the University of Maryland Eastern Shore and the local community, I will also feature several guests from around the country. In recent years, we've heard quite a bit about policing and debates over police reform. Today's guests are here to address those issues. They are Dr. Lorenzo Boyd and Officer Lydia Polk. Dr. Boyd is the former chair of the Criminal Justice and Social Sciences Departments at UMES. This January, Dr. Boyd joined the Henry C. Lee College of Criminal Justice and Forensic Sciences as Associate Professor of Criminal Justice, and he became the director of the Center for Advanced Policing at Lee College. Dr. Boyd's service as a former deputy sheriff in Boston, Massachusetts, informed his nearly 20-year career in higher education, where his teaching, training, and research focused on urban policing, race and crime, and criminal justice systems, diversity issues, and criminological theory. Lydia Polk retired from the Metropolitan Police Department in Washington, D.C. on March 4, 2017, after 26 years of dedicated service. In 1999, she received the Chief of Police Medal of Honor for the apprehension, arrest, and conviction of two murder suspects. In 2007, she received the Chief of Police Award for the apprehension, arrest, conviction of an armed carjacking suspect. In 2009, she received the 2nd District's Patrol Service Area Crime Safety Award, and now she currently serves as security at her home church in Largo, Maryland. Dr. Boyd, Officer Polk, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Officer Polk, I want to start with you. What inspired you to seek a career in law enforcement?
I sought out a career in law enforcement because I wanted to follow in my father's footsteps. Also, I have a compassion, passion, love, and desire to help and serve others who are in need. And it doesn't hurt at all that I have the gift of gab to communicate well with people.
Dr. Boyd, same question. What inspired you to go into law enforcement?
As I was graduating college, I needed a job, and that was the job that I landed first. So I figured I'd stay in for about 6 months while I waited for something else. And that 6 months turned into a nearly 15-year career in the city of Boston.
Officer Polk, you mentioned your father had served as a police officer. How long was his career?
He had a 25-year career as a special police officer at the government printing office down in D.C. off of North Capitol Street, Northwest, where he served as a security officer.
Did your father have any reservations about you being involved in law enforcement, since that is a dangerous job?
Y'all don't laugh, but he actually cried and fussed at me for applying for the department. I mean, being a security special police officer is a lot different from your street cop. And so my father just felt that it was a little bit too much for me. He really didn't know how tough I was.
You know, I was reading just a few of your impressive list of awards at the start of the show, and you've had others. Was it difficult for you to work in the streets of D.C., stopping crime, and then also, you know, gaining the respect of your male counterparts? Did you ever have to deal with sexism or anything like that?
No, I didn't have to deal with sexism, but I didn't find it difficult at all to patrol the streets of D.C. fighting crime and community policing, or to gain the trust and respect of my male counterparts, because I gave honor and respect first where it was due. As a female officer, I showed myself approved by asserting myself vocally as well as physically if I needed to. Although you must be sensitive to the other person's situation and need, but you cannot show that you're passive or you're scared in this line of work, because people will, you know, turn that into a weakness. They may feel that they can take advantage of you. I did not have a problem at all with you know, my male counterparts because they trusted me, you know, and they knew that I could handle myself, you know, with any situation that was presented to me.
Is it difficult to juggle, you know, being a police officer and all that entails and, you know, that emotional strain?
It can be at times, but back in the olden days, in the 80s and the 90s, they taught you in the academy how to switch that hat. Meaning, when you're at work, you have to be a certain way. You have to act and handle yourself in a certain way. But when you leave the police station to go home to your loved ones, you know, you have to be able to switch that. You have to be able to turn that hat back around, you know, and you can't take the job home to your family because it makes for a horrible home life.
Dr. Boyd, talk a little bit about your career as a police officer.
Well, let me just jump on and piggyback what the Officer Polk was saying. Being able to switch from the policing role into the person you are is really, really important. Because when we talk about what happens to the police, the media tells us that there's a war on the police, which statistically is incorrect. Because now it's safer to be a police than it has been even before the Nixon administration. The problem that we do see is that officers are taking their own lives at a higher rate than they're being killed on the job. So being able to turn that switch off to do self-care and to have wellness as a priority is really, really important, because for 3 years running, police officers have fallen at their own hands at higher rates than they have been being killed. So it's definitely important to understand who you are. And for me, having a religious base to fall back on, not only did I have my personal family, my biological family, but then I also had my church family and I had a spiritual family to kind of help me balance that. And if I were to give any advice to people on the job now, have a life outside of work. Have something else that's really important, because that's the balance that you're going to need.
And Dr. Boyd, what inspired you to leave being a police officer and then going to higher education?
Yeah, I did. So I graduated the academy the same semester I graduated my undergrad. But then I did my master's degree. I went to law school and earned a PhD, all in uniform. Wow. So having a PhD is the thing that got me out of policing into higher ed. And so for the last 20 years, I've been researching policing. I've been teaching about policing, and I've been training police officers. So I don't think that I'm out of policing. I'm just out of uniform. And I think it's the next phase in my policing career that I'm dealing with now.
When you train officers, what's the number, other than the self-care that you just mentioned, what's the number one piece of advice you try to leave them with?
Community relations is what I try to talk to them about. And the phrase that I coined is respect is the currency of the street. And if you're not spending it well, you're going to have a bad day. So you need to start off treating people with respect and dignity. Even people that you think may be guilty of committing a crime, you still need to show them levels of respect and dignity as well.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about that, and I know CNN, they did a special maybe a year or so ago with W. Kamau Bell, I think it's the comic's name, and he had a whole episode dedicated to that topic of community policing. And, you know, the fact that, you know, they were saying how in the show in the past, the police officer used to walk the beat and they knew everybody in the neighborhood. And a lot of the times the police officers actually lived in those communities, or at least at one point they lived in the community. So they knew the people. Do you think that's important that officer, you know, really have that close relationship with that particular community where he or she works?
I definitely think it's important. I don't know that they necessarily need to live there. Mm-hmm. If they're comfortable living there, it's definitely a plus. But getting out of your patrol car and getting to know people, shaking hands, talking to people face-to-face, that's how you build levels of relationship. And when we talk about people disliking the police, it's really easy for someone to say, I hate the police, it's harder for them to say, I don't like Officer Polk or Officer Boyd or Officer Wright. That's a lot harder. So when you build a personal relationship and show them that you're a person and not just part of this larger industry, I think that's where the community relations piece actually kicks in. And it's really helpful because once you get to know your community, not only will they look out for you and, you know, they'll kind of watch your back, but they'll also let you know stuff that's going on. Because even in the most fragile communities, there are still really, really, really good people in there, God-fearing, law-abiding citizens that deserve protection and they deserve service. And those are the ones that are going to tell you, we don't want the bad element in our community either. So those are the ones that are going to help.
And Dr. Boyd, you and I had a chance to work together for about 2 years while you were here at UMES, serving as chair of the Criminal Justice Department and then also chair of the Social Sciences Department. So what are you doing now over at Lee College in New Haven?
Well, I've got a couple of appointments. One, I'm running the Center for Advanced Policing, and we're building curricula to train officers. And we're not doing traditional policing, because if you think about the old analogy, the history of the jungle is written from the perspective of the lion. So I'm trying to teach policing from the perspective of the community. So if officers get to become empathetic and understand the community concerns, then they are better able to deal with and to service the community. And the second thing I'm doing, I'm also under contract with Yale University Police. So I do a bunch of training for their officers, and I'm building curriculum for them. And I'm also helping them to build a community policing plan in the city of New Haven and on their campus.
Right. And there was an incident at Yale, and you helped out a little. Do you mind discussing that at all with the audience?
Right. It was a situation where a white graduate student called the police on the black graduate student who was sleeping in a common area. And then the police got called, and the black student decided to film her interaction on Facebook Live. And all we got to see was that one perspective, and it appeared that there was a bunch of police officers that were antagonizing this person. But when you look behind the scenes, when you looked at all of the body cam, the police were actually doing the things that they were supposed to do, and they were caught in a bad situation. And it wasn't necessarily the fault of the police. The problem in that situation is the problem that happens in a lot of America, where we see white citizens weaponizing the police to subjugate their level of racial bias. So we had another situation where a white person called the police on a black person, then the white person gets to back off, and now the angry black person now has to deal with the police, and that sometimes becomes volatile. So I got to go in and do the assessment on that and write that up and pretty much show that the problem wasn't a policing problem, it's a societal problem that we were dealing with.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to UMES 30. Today's guests are Dr. Lorenza Boyd and retired D.C. police officer Lydia Polk. And we're talking about policing and law enforcement. Dr. Boyd, I want to come back to one point you had made earlier. And then, Lydia, I want to get you back in the conversation. Dr. Boyd, you had mentioned that the number of officers taking their own lives has been on the rise. What's the cause of that?
Well, there's a lot of things, and, you know, there is no one cause, but part of the problem in policing, if you have an issue or you have a concern, if you go to the employee assistance program or if you go for help to be safe, the first thing they're going to do is pull you off the street and have you surrender your firearm until they figure out what's going on with you, until you can get some counseling. And for the police, that's one of the worst things that you can do to a police officer, in their opinion. So a lot of them don't want to talk about it, so they then start to self-medicate or they ignore the problem, and then it becomes a bigger and bigger problem to the point where they can no longer handle it. So the answer is getting the police officers to find people that are in safe zones to be able to talk to them and to understand that, you know, everyone goes through this, everyone has these feelings, and we can talk through it and get you through it.
That is very true. A lot of times we as officers, we have this this Superman, Superwoman type of mentality, and we try to put on that armor, like, you know, we can handle it, we can do this. And so what happens is sometimes we forget about taking care of self because we're so busy trying to take care of others. Most agencies have the employees assistance program where you can go to the psychiatrist and the psychologist to talk about your issues. But again, like Dr. Boyd said, what happens is they place you in a non-contact status and they revoke your powers. And that is a problem because then you're walking around, you know, without your service weapon and credentials. And it really makes it hard on the officer to make that decision. Okay, do I go and get help for my situation? But knowing the fact that they're going to put me in a non-contact status with the community and they're going to revoke my powers. And I have had some coworkers that have committed suicide in my 26-year career, and it's really a problem.
Officer Polk, what's your opinion of the Black Lives Matter protesters and celebrities such as Colin Kaepernick, Meek Mill, Jay-Z, who accuse police of unfairly targeting Black men and women?
It's my belief and opinion that no matter whether you're Black, white, Hispanic, Asian, Middle Eastern, etc., all lives matter. And it should matter to every police officer that is serving and protecting the community. And I've never had a problem with protesters and celebrities because everybody has a right to their own opinions and beliefs, as we all do. I feel that it was a noble move on Colin Kaepernick and Neil Meek's part to come out vocally as well as in a physical presence to show their disdain for the injustice on how police handle their scenes and how they unfairly target Black men and women in the community. Because the celebrities sit in a more visual view of people, the celebrities, they use their voices to speak out about police brutality, and it's in the media, it's in the forefront of the media, and it gets everyone's attention. So that always helps bring the injustice and that police are doing to the people in the community.
Dr. Boyd, I think you wanted to respond as well to this question.
Yeah, let me first start off by saying the vast majority of police officers that do the job every day are good officers trying to do the right thing. They're compassionate and they're empathetic about the community. The vast majority of police officers in this country are good officers. And when I try to bring in to police departments and try to get them to see that the Black Lives Matter movement is not anti-police, it's just anti-bad police, when one group says Black Lives Matter and then another group says that Blue Lives Matter or All Lives Matter, we know that. We're not saying only Black Lives Matter, but we're highlighting that Black lives do in fact matter because of the amount of Black people that are shot and killed by the police. And when you say Black Lives Matter and then somebody else screams out, well, Blue Lives Matter, that's like going to a cancer center and saying, you know, there are other diseases too. Yeah, we get that. That's just not what we're talking about here. And until we can get people to realize that this is an epidemic, that you're four times or five times more likely to get killed by the police if you're Black and male and unarmed than if you're white, then that's something that needs to be addressed. And the Black Lives Matter movement, it's a watchdog for the criminal justice system. The only power it has as a social movement is to shed a light on situations. And, you know, based on the First Amendment of the Constitution, they absolutely have the right to do that.
How much do you attribute factors like race and class to perceptions of crime and policing?
Well, there's a book written by Jim Fife called Above the Law, and he talked about the term symbolic assailant. And statistically, who do we assume will be problematic? If you are young, if you're male, if you are urban, and if you are black, you are thought to be more of a threat than any other category, when statistically, black people don't commit more crime than white people. It's just they are categorized in a particular area. So when we talk about issues of race only, we miss the boat. What we should be saying is that crime rates are highest in low-income areas, in fragile communities, or impoverished communities. It's not just a race thing. It's also race and economics. It's compounded. It's intersectionality there.
Officer Polk, we hear in the media a lot about this, the so-called blue shield. And I actually want to ask you this. So if a fellow officer, this is hypothetically speaking, if one of your fellow officers or even somebody who is your partner killed an unarmed person, would your natural reaction be to side with your partner and assume that they had he or she had a legitimate reason for using their gun?
Not for me. I have always stood for what's right. If one of my partners or fellow officers shot and killed an unarmed person of any color on my watch and my presence, and the officer is not justified to do so, I'm going to stand my ground as a person of integrity and morals, and I'm going to make my statement to the Internal Affairs Bureau on the truth on the events that happen and always cover myself and for any discipline or incarceration that may be handed down from the department and let the chips fall where they may. One thing, an officer... you always have that thin blue line of trust between your partner and your fellow officers. But a lot of officers cross that thin blue line, you know, and then they put you in a situation where they want you to choose. Well, I'm going to always stand for what's right. I'm going to always stand for truth and justice, and I'm not going to put myself in a situation to where I have to, you know, look over my shoulder. I believe in the thin blue line. Don't get me wrong. I do. But I'm going to always stand for what's right.
Dr. Boyd, do we need more police reform?
You know what? I don't think we need more reform. We just need for the policies that we have right now to have more teeth. The problem is statistically, even when the police are wrong, they're less likely to be charged, they're less likely to be indicted, and when they are charged, they are less likely to be convicted. So if we could spend more time just shoring up the policies that we have, because all cops want bad cops out because it makes everyone look bad. Every officer wishes that the bad officer was not there. So if we can just enforce the policies that we have, I don't think we necessarily need more reform. We just need people to do what's right.
So we're in an election season, and we're going to hear a lot about gun control and, you know, if we need more gun control to help curb some of the violence. As two people in law enforcement, what's your take on this whole gun debate issue?
If every single man, woman, and child in the United States had one gun, there's still enough guns so that half of the people can get a second one. And when we look at other nations, particularly a similarly situated nation like Australia that banned the possession of guns, they don't have the mass killings that we do. They don't have the shootings we do. They don't have the armed robberies that we do. And when people talked about the Second Amendment right to bear arms, when they wrote that, we were talking about muskets that fired every 45 seconds. We weren't talking about these automatic and semi-automatic high-capacity rounds. That was not in the forefathers' thought. So if we could control guns, it'll be safer for the officers, but it'll be safer for the people on the street, because now we see guns killing people in schools, in playgrounds, on college campuses. We see kids getting killed by their parents' guns at home.
So before we get out of here, we're almost out of time, but I had the two of you speak to a group of students in a class I taught last spring on policing and you know, policing black bodies, policing race relations. And you all gave some very insightful information about how you should react should you be pulled over by a police officer. And I think that this is really important, especially now that it's summertime. And this is good for everybody, but, you know, especially our young people, if they're, you know, out coming from graduation parties or they're, you know, going to the beach or just hanging out, enjoying the summer, should you get pulled over by a police officer or should you be stopped by a police officer and you feel like you haven't done anything wrong, there's a way you're supposed to, I guess, react so that you don't lead to, you know, further violence in the situation, escalating into somebody having their life snatched away or being arrested for, you know, for no reason. So can you all just kind of talk to that?
I know that people get nervous when they get stopped by an officer. My suggestion would be, first, be calm in the situation. When you're stopped, pull off to the side of the road as you should. Put your car in park. Don't keep your foot on the brake. Put your car in park and shut the car off. Before you shut the car off, roll down your window just enough so that you can hear the communication between you and the officer. And place your hands on the steering wheel and just wait for the officer to approach. And once the officer has approached you, allow the officer to give the instruction on what he or she will want you to do. And just be guided by what the officer wants you to do. And you'll find that the traffic stop will go easy. And you'd be surprised. You know, if you have a good personality, you might be able to get yourself out of a ticket.
When people say that they're nervous at a traffic stop, the officer doesn't know you or who's in your car or what you have. The officer may also be nervous. Have everybody in your car sit with their hands visible. Keep your hands on the steering wheel. Wait for further orders. And the one thing I can say, even if you think the stop was not valid, the side of the road is not the time to assert your First Amendment rights. Take the ticket. You can always go to court, but arguing on the side of the road isn't helpful for anyone.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. Thank you all so much for joining us this morning. And also thank you all for all of your service to the communities and for all your hard work and everything that you do.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We end each show with a segment called Parting Shots. Here I give my thoughts on something happening in the news, pop culture, or life in general that's piqued my interest. So the school year is over at the University of Maryland Eastern Shore, UMES, as it is at many schools across the country. But I wanted to just say congratulations to three of my colleagues. They received their tenure this school year. And that's a major, major accomplishment for anybody in higher education. And they are Dr. Nasita Walters-Jones in the Department of Criminal Justice, Dr. Tyrone Chase in the Organizational Leadership Program, which is in the Department of Social Sciences, and then Dr. Patricia Gosley in the Department of Education. Job well done to all three of you. Take some time to yourselves this summer to just relax and, you know, really just celebrate that accomplishment. And that's our show for the week. Thanks again to our guest today. We do this every Sunday at 10:30 a.m. If you like the show, please tell your friends about it. Like us on Facebook and other forms of social media. A special shout out, as always, to Uncle Phil and Aunt Viv. Have a blessed day. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of 91.3 WESM or the University of Maryland Eastern Shore.